Welcome back. This is the Slide In Podcast, episode 30. I'm Braden Anderson. This is Kelly Gallup.
Johnny McClure.
I can't believe we've been doing this for 30 weeks.
I can't believe I put up with you that long.
Yeah, it's funny.
But I put up with Johnny for 23 years, so.
Patience, Kelly.
Yes.
Very much patience. Why don't we start off
I'm going to start off something nice.
Oh, okay.
Because you're going to piss me off like last week, and yeah, I'm going to get off.
That's the fun
because I'm, but this guy, Wes Willard, sent me, said, hey, Kelly, you don't know me. Watch the podcast. He said, a few episodes ago back, your copy of Steelhead and Fly Fishing, he said, was never returned to you, albeit it isn't one of the initial rare 250 copies that you had. It is from the year it came out, and I believe it'll look better on your shelf than mine. And then he has a very extensive question, which I'm going to answer, but I forgot to check the rod. He's asking about lake rods, and I forgot. So I'm going to answer it, but how cool is that?
Very cool.
I mean, very cool. And then I'm pissed because I also got another incredible gift, a sculptor from Bozeman. I'm only going to say it's a sculpture, but it's going to be in the freaking Wall of Fame up there. You will not believe this thing. It's so badass. So now I'm happy. I'm in a great mood. I've been riding that hoe for 2 days. The back hoe.
Right, yes.
And,
nice.
I've almost got all my dirt work done. I can't see shit. I was in the barn putting in, oh, God, and then
I can piss you off real
blowing.
Quick. Will you fix your mic because it fell off?
What a piece of shit. And so I was close to done, so I was thinking I'd be really good. It's kind of hard on a T-shirt. I did notice that it gets loud if you look down like this.
Yeah, so anyway, scratch your back. Or,
that's what I was doing, scratching my back, which was sunburned as shit.
I don't know if you can always tell I'm always anxious when I see you start doing shit. I just know it's going to mess with our audio, but we'll survive.
So far, so good.
Okay, so I wanted to start off. Wait, do you have something you're pissed about?
I thought you were going to start with that.
Oh, yeah, let's start with that. Kelly, what are you pissed about today?
I'm still pissed at that thing from last week. I have two questions.
Guide discounts?
Well, it wasn't just guides. I mean, but I did think of one thing about that. There was one guide in particular, which is very... And it's not all guides. It's a very limited number of guides that do it. That just happened to be the guide that did it. But I remember when that cat came in 3 years ago. And it struck me as strange from just the human perspective. But I don't do it, so I don't get it. But I have never met this person. And you lead with looking for a discount. But the thing that I found relatively the same with everyone who did it in that world was it just perplexes me why you think anyone, I don't care what business it, you know, if you like a restaurant, you don't walk in and say, what's my deal, you know? And if you work for Burger King and you go to McDonald's, you don't say, hey, I'm in the industry. How about flipping me a burger or a fry, right? The whole lead off thing to me is amazing. But what I started thinking about it, and there's two or three guys that came to my mind immediately. Scotty Hall, Johnny France. JT France has been guiding this river since it was a freaking glacier, right?
Yeah.
He said, and they always came in with their customers. JT's funny because his customers are a blast too. And he's like, go buy something, right? And it's like, there was a cause-effect thing. So you come into a shop, you've never met the owner, you ask for a discount, you say you're a guide. Well, what does that mean to me? What have you done to have you brought your guides in? Have you brought your clients in and said, hey, Scotty Hall comes in, classiest guide you'll ever meet in your life. Kelly, this is my friend, you know, Ann and John. Never calls anybody his customer. He says, these are my friends.
Not his clients. These are,
no.
Hey,
and he
this
needs
is my
it.
Good friend.
Yeah.
It is the epitome of class. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
It really
and so
is.
They come in and their customers are always here and they're, you know, and they shop and they do. You'd think you, as a human being, you'd think cause effect. I do a lot for you. Maybe you can do something for me. You don't walk in and say, I've never met you in my life. So what do you got for me?
It's
a boot in the ass. Get the fuck out.
It's
just
quid pro quo.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was just, I kept thinking about it, and I tempered my pissed off by thinking of JT and Scotty.
So I remember you telling me about JT France, that he will do that. And I was like, okay, sure. And then he came in with his clients, and he said, go buy a hat. They're
over
there.
He flies my colors all day, every day.
He does, yes.
He's always, everywhere he goes, he's branded, yeah. Right? And so I thought, okay, well, I'll let that. But I just, it buffered me.
That's what it was. I remember you called us and you said, JT France is coming in. You give him a discount. And
But it won't take the damn thing.
No, I know. He wouldn't. He didn't. And he bought a slide-in sweatshirt. He bought all this shit.
Think about back when, and most people, I try to give him stuff. And it's a fight.
Yeah.
Right? It's a fight. He knows what we make. But you think of some of the guys, remember when your buddy Samson, he used to bring his cut and use our boat launch. And most guys, hey, can I use the boat launch? Yeah. And then they'll ask me for a discount. And he would bring in $300 bottles of wine, three or four of them, for letting him use the launch twice. Mm-hmm. I'm like, dude, it might be a Coors Light kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe a banquet if you're really feeling
but
fancy.
But it's really not $900 worth of wine.
Right.
But there was... There was never in the most gracious, thank you very much. Thank you very much. But to lead into a relationship, I just found it's so freaking irritating. And I asked that one kid that came in, because he was a guide. And I asked him, I said, well, I got an idea. You might have been there because when we first opened. And I asked him, I said, well, I got an idea. How about after you've brought 20 customers in? Because that was the other thing. They don't have their customers with them.
Right.
So they're not even shuttling their customers. And I says, well, how about you bring in 20 customers and, we'll just see how much your customers spend this much money. How about we do a reward program? Like Cabela Bucks, right?
Yeah.
We'll give you for every $100 you spend, I'll give you 10 per $10 on Cabela and slide in bucks. Right?
I think most places are even worse deals than that. I think Madison Foods, you get like 10 cents per $100 you spend.
Great, whatever. Yeah. But you know what? Quid pro quo.
Exactly.
You're scratching each other's back. Yep. So I just thought it was the arrogance. But I know people are, everybody's different. But there's just places that I always wonder if that person walks into a restaurant or, they've pretty much eliminated it with cars, even used cars. The price is the price. There's nobody.
You can't really negotiate.
No, and you really never could anyway. You just thought you were.
Yeah. Right.
So I just wonder if those people go to every place. Like, do you go to, the lumber yard? What's my price? This 2x4? This whole one?
Some guy messaged us on Instagram. Let me find this real quick because it made me chuckle. He said, my favorite, this is John King, Illinois Flyman, said, my favorite discount when customers ask, Rutt Daniels, 50% off, double the price. There you go. There's your discount.
Yeah, you hear that all the time about the, what's mine? What's my price?
Yeah, what do I get?
And the other part of that is to me is what in your psyche says to you, I owe you money? What in your psyche, when you walk in and you say to anybody, any place, anywhere, are we friends? Well, for sure now, you're taking advantage of your friend. We don't know each other. So are you that freaking special that you think someone you've never met and you've never done business with owes you something for your business? That's just a way of thinking that is just, to me... I just don't do it, never have. I don't understand it. I don't understand where it could come from, whose parents it was that says, yeah, you got to do this. I get it. It happens every day. And every day I very politely say, I don't work with that. Yeah. I work with service. I work with, like when we have people walking, I hear it from guys from Pennsylvania who are arguably, in my way of thinking, I think the best anglers come out of that zone. They're in Michigan where it's really tough fishing and they come and they're really educated usually on their flies. And they'll tell me all the time, my flies are from back east. So let's go through the fly box. And we sit and go through their fly boxes. And I'm like, fuck, you got a week's worth of shit here. You got everything in here will work. They're all freaking bugs, for God's sakes. And they're like, well, I got to buy something. No, don't. You really don't. We deal in, I mean, how many hundreds of times have we sat for a half hour drilling illustrations on how, drawing illustrations on how to set a rig up or go out in the yard and go, come on, we got to see what's going on with you. Go out there. There's never, that's time. That's money. That's like we have on the fireable offenses. Like I tell every kid that works here, you build this customer base is built one person at a time.
Yep.
One customer that you treat right. And walking in and saying, what's my price? You know, and it's those people aren't really customers. They're not people you want anyway.
Yeah.
And usually they're just messing with me because I've said something to them before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think a couple of those jokesters have been calling into the shop asking for discounts.
Oh, yeah, they do. We did that. They do it all the time. Or we got on the online, well, this is a big order. You know, what's my price? What's the difference? This is all to you.
Yeah.
You know, this is like, I'm going to buy a new boat.
Here.
I want the big one. Can I get a better price on it?
Free shipping.
Yeah, free shipping.
So an example of the, you know, one customer at a time. I got to call it out because I loved it today. Jake did a great job. This woman named Jamie came in here and was asking about bugs up on Hebgen. So Jake, you know, described what he'd been fishing up there. Said, you want to go look at the fly bins? We'll pick a couple out, pick out a couple bugs. And comes over and goes, if you want, I can set your rod up for you too. You know, tie your bugs, tie your leader on, do everything. And she goes, I actually used to be a fishing guide, so I'm good on that part. I can do that, but I do appreciate the bug recommendations. And then they both kind of chuckled and got along, but like that's above and beyond. I mean, you know, and
when you consider today's world and you walk into, have you walked in a mall lately? It's like freaking zombie. It's like Night of the Living Dead. They just haven't started eating people. They all just stare. Half of them are on the freaking cell phones. They're in the, it, there's a funny vibration in those things. It's like, and it's just like, they
so,
don't,
so what the
when
kids
somebody
call
walks
that,
up.
What the kids call that is an NPC, which is a non-player character in a video game. So it's like a computer-controlled character. And when you walk around good. Malls,
something
you see
I just agreed with for the first time with somebody from that generation.
Yeah, some of the kids say.
It's not true. There's a lot of great ones. But yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, I truly believed that one customer one time, and just, I don't know. But I, like I said, I was buffered by the two of those guys, and there's a lot of other ones. I mean, lots of them.
In defense of those people, like, they may not even have any idea that what they're doing is different or odd. I mean, for example, I remember being, I must have been 10 or 12, and one of my dad's good buddies works in the ski industry and offered to, you know, I broke my skis and he offered to get a pro deal, to get a discount on a new pair. And, you know, I'm looking through their website and I'm like, I'm not really sure those are going to work for me. They might be too big, they, whatever the reason was. I remember saying to my dad, well, if they don't work for me, we could just resell them and probably make some money on it. And he goes, that's not what we do.
Yeah. Like,
that's just not what you do.
First of all, we just got the pro staff guy just screwing the guy that owns the ski shop.
Well,
you know?
He owns the ski shop.
So oh, he owns
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he owns the ski shop.
Well, that's different.
He's going to give us a deal on
and there's
it.
A giant difference between offering and being asked.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
Your dad didn't ask.
No, he didn't. No, that it's guy
like,
was
like
very
JT.
Generous.
Here, take this shirt. No.
Right.
I'm like, don't make me make you. I'm scared of you. You're crazy. But yeah, enough of that. Because I felt good after I thought about those good guys. And it's such a small percentage. It really is compared to how many we see a day.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one negative
but
story.
But the thing is, it's never somebody I know.
Right.
Or 90% of the time, never have met. That's how you lead off your conversation. Bet your dates go great.
or it's me asking the fly shop employees for a discount.
Exactly.
All right, I wanted to jump into a comment I got on Instagram. We'll put a photo up on the screen. I already showed Kelly an image of this. Let me pull it up so I get the name and stuff right here. Jacob Evans sent this to me on Instagram. He said, hey man, loving the pod. Not sure if you're doing the segment about Kelly critiquing flies, but have been trying my hand at his zoo cougar pattern. I'm not comfortable with deer hair yet, but have found that I can shape a crustaceous brush to a similar effect. Is this blasphemy? Appreciate any input or advice. So we'll show you the photo now. Kelly, I saw it. What'd you think?
I thought it was great. And this is reminiscent of, I think, last week's question on, I can't remember much about last week other than my rant. But I told, I don't know if it was last week or what, even if I told the story, it was somebody else, but I was talking about when somebody else had a fly that was synthetic and the company didn't want to do it because it was too close to the dungeon. And I said, well, I never do that. And so it's not blasphemy to try something new. It'd be blasphemy is when you take the son of a bitch and you change the color flank and call it your fly. And it's like, or, you know, you reshape the head. It's still a zoo cougar, whatever. But I think I mentioned this last week. I just can't remember if it was in the shop talking or if I was doing this. But, it was about the foam. And I said, I just don't play foam well because I just was never into it, right? And since all these guys that work for me now, I mean, Nathan and Chuck and Andrew and Hunter, all grew up with the brushes, right? Making their own. They're always customizing stuff. And they're all, and two or three of them are musky guys. And so they're really big into them. I don't do it because I've started to play them with them a little bit, but it's not what I want. But the effect is going to be pretty much the same because it's going to jettison its water and it's going to be airy head and it's going to float for the most part, I would guess, for a minute or two. That'd be the only downside I would see if it didn't. And critiquing your fly, I didn't. I glanced at it. I could look at it again, but I thought maybe the head was, you might have got away with one or two less turns. Like with synthetics, I like to see them not super thick because that's more reminiscent of a wool head, which I've been asked, that's blasphemy too, taking a zoo cougar and making a wool head and calling it your fly. Of course, you know, people say, well, have you ever tried this? If there's a natural material, I've tried it in every fly in the fucking world. I mean, I tie for a living. And of course I have. And if I haven't, one of my good friends has.
Right.
Right? And so, but the hair head was by design because that fly is designed to hover and not really sink. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't fish that fly deep. And I want it to go up in the column. I want it to get trapped and go up, not down. Hence Bob Linzeman's butt monkey, right? Wool head. Well, I also put a hair head on that. And it didn't fish as good. You know, it just, I wasn't going to, that fly, Bob designed that fly for Nipigon brook trout. I mean, it's been tried and tested for a long time, way before I saw it. And I got credit for that fly. I shouldn't have. I just put it in the catalog. I never got a royalty on it. But I put the articulated one in, and it made it bigger, right? But I don't think that fished any better than the regular one did anyway.
The regular one fishes big, too. I was surprised the first time I threw it. It throws way more of a profile. Like
it's big.
Looks big in the water.
Yeah, it doesn't sink super fast, but fast enough. But back to his fly. And you're looking at this fly, you know, if anybody wants to write in and say, because I can't say I ever did it. I looked at it very quickly and I thought maybe you could have achieved the same silhouette because that's what that head's for. It's silhouette.
So this is how it went, right? I tell Kelly we're going to talk about this and I want him to see the photo beforehand so he's time to make some thoughts on it. I show him the photo and it was maybe a quarter second. He goes, love it. Awesome.
Yeah.
And then back.
Looked great. Got a collar. Did the thing. Yeah. To me, but I could sit down and count it pretty quick, but it looked, as most people, when they first start doing them with the synthetics, they just way overdo them. I don't think it was way overdone. I liked it a lot.
No, it looks
but
good.
I was just thinking, I'll bet you could get away with a little less. I'm only worried about it slowing that fly down enough that it doesn't kick like it does with the hair. But I bet you it fishes like a champ. And it's indestructible.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I mean,
it'll take a lot of teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I thought it was cool. But I don't use a lot of materials. I get these questions a lot. And a lot of them, I just don't because I'm not, some of it I'm not familiar with. Some of it I've tried, I don't like. I've done a lot of my own dubbing brushes. We used to do dubbing brushes out of, before that thicker material, we used to do them all kinds of dubbing and roll them out. And that's where the stacking of the heads came, the original TNA bunker style where we, you know, did two on top and then shaped them.
Yeah.
You know, where we didn't, started out trying to shape them. Manager Rock Wilson in Michigan. He's my manager. Great guy. He died tragically, you know, just too young. And he liked to put wool. He would do them in a dubbing loop and make these huge wool heads. And they pushed this enormous, but it was really like, it was the original brush. Mm. You know, we just did them in a loop. And so he did really big. That was too much for me. And I was trying to get a higher profile and a thinner, you know, thinner profile and a higher profile. I didn't want it so heavy to pull against the, you know, the water. And so, but we did them. I just didn't, most of that stuff you try and you say, okay, I like that. I love hair.
Yeah.
I just love working hair. I mean, spinning hair is so easy if you take the time. I mean, you'll take a 4x4 patch and just spin hair and you'll be better than I am in no time. It's easy. I mean, as that happened with Bramer, that prick. I mean, he went and spun like four of them, came back. He'd mastered every technique I'd ever seen and was making up his own, right? And so, I don't know. A lot of things I don't do because I'm stuck in the past. I like soul.
Yeah, soul.
By the way, nobody's got this fly right. Somebody got closer. I'm just telling you, it's a wet fly. And I really didn't do anything other than change the wing. I feel like giving it up, but I don't want to because it's kind of fun.
We'll do one more.
One more. It's a wet fly.
I'm not totally sure nobody's gotten it yet. I thought I might have seen one comment that had it.
I saw one that was close. It was very close to the same fly. It's a very famous wet fly. I'll give you a hint. Replace this with a quill wing. Well, on that size, it would probably have to be a turkey wing, turkey quill. To just forget this. Look at the body. It should be so simple. I love taking old wet flies and just making them bigger into streamers, right? Like the Queen of the Waters and some of those that were like the Grizzly King had a streamer and a wet fly. And this one was just, it's so, when you hear it, we're going to show the picture, you'll see essentially I've just changed the wing and made it that long instead of that long.
Sorry.
So somebody's close.
Sorry to those that are listening to the podcast.
That aren't looking. It's a fly on the desk.
It's all right. You'll be okay. All right. I wanted to, actually I had another question about that guy's fly.
Which guy? The synthetic?
Jacob Evans. Yeah. So do you think you could incorporate foam under the brush somehow? There's, or maybe slightly behind it?
I've seen guys that have done that triple layer foam for the head.
Yeah.
Where they do the wedge three on top of it. You know, yeah. The biggest one is the thing. I did one like that after I saw it. I didn't think it fished well at all. It was kind of crazy. It went around and it spun.
So how much do you think the floating properties of deer hair on the Zoo Cougar specifically add to its fish catching ability?
A lot. How many of you seen eat it dry? I mean, they're triggered by that thing.
Yeah, a couple. Yeah.
They eat the shit out of it.
On the hunt for the thing, was that a 25 or 20?
No, it's bigger than that.
No, that was the 28.
28 something, yeah.
Yeah, if you guys haven't watched that, go watch it, 28-inch.
Mouse it on the surface. It's barely twitching. And but it's going to throw the profile. It's going to throw profile.
It's such a good sculpting profile that it's...
Yeah, it's hard not to.
I figure even if it's fish low, it'll fish.
That was my point about making it less. You put a lot of synthetic, once it's wet, it doesn't jettison its water quickly and it'll sink the fly. It'll tend to go head first.
Yeah.
But you're still animating it, so it should still... And the flank's going to keep it doing that weird shit, and so... But it was cool looking.
I'm very interested in it because when I throw streamers upstream, I tend to stay away from floating flies that don't have weight in the head because you have such a short retrieve. And sometimes they'll still eat it, but it pisses me off when they skate across the top.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to get three pops, three jerks, I tend to stay away from even Zoo Cougars or Woolly Sculpins when I'm fishing that short where I want to be able to break water.
I would not fish upstream without a conehead woolly sculpt.
Conehead, though. Mm-hmm. That's great because it's got weight incorporated. It's going to break surface.
When we brought flies out last week and I showed the jig flies.
Yeah.
I should have just brought the freaking cone head. Yeah. But I was trying to make a point that we can run the beads or whatever we could do. I mean, I think on film, my three of my biggest fish have all been on cone head willie. I wouldn't fish, and if I could have one or the other, I would have a cone head.
Yeah.
Because I can broaden the head, still give it its profile. I can fish it in anything, any type of water.
Throw it with a floating line. The fish jumped below Sunwest on that floating line.
That thing that straightened that hook out. But I mean, I've never seen a fly that it's just so simple. It's like a woolly bugger. It's just so simple that it's great. But upstream, I never go fish without a black and a tan conehead woolly number two.
Yeah.
Period, end of discussion. And when I'm getting my ass kicked, it's just always a savior. Always.
I know I pulled this fly last week, the white silk kitty. I'd almost forgotten about it. And then, because I've been fishing the flathead a lot, I've been fishing a lot of silk kitty or slick willies, a lot of other stuff. Well, I was just in Wyoming for a few days, and I didn't need to change bugs.
Yeah.
They climbed all over that thing. It fishes great at short distance. It jigs. You can really.
There's a hair. That'd be another fly that you could brush very easily.
Yeah.
Any of my woolheads or Bob's butt monkey, I'm sure. Any of those woolheads.
Johnny's Kilwhitey.
Kilwhitey.
Yeah.
You could do brush on. And the thing about the brushes, you can get color. You can layer shit in there,
yeah,
and you can
really
get some,
cool
especially
colors.
In those blue iridescents or yellow, just those hints. You can do that in a brush and get some really badass.
Yeah,
I'm just not sure on the floater if it's going to be as good, but it was cool looking.
Yeah, it was cool looking, and I bet it would fish. And like I said, I think it'd be great for that short distance upstream stuff. I don't know if you're going to get the same kind of reaction bites out of it. I don't know if it would have the same move as a floating hairhead, but... Let us know. Fish it.
Yeah.
Let me know. Thanks for the question. We like that stuff. That's fun. All right. This question comes to us from Fred Kirk, 6967.
By the way, I'm drinking coffee at 6 o'clock at night. Riding that wildcat was hard on me.
Was it?
Yeah. Eyes feel like two piss holes in the snow. Oh boy, actually. Hey, I just covered in that stuff. But, yeah, about halfway here, I drove off the road for a minute to see what's over there.
Yeah.
Decided to have some coffee. So I might be getting a little faster here in a minute.
It's coming. Okay.
I'm not allowed to have coffee when we do these. If we do them in the afternoon, I'm not allowed to do it until 1 o'clock. That was Johnny's rule.
Yeah.
I'm not dealing with this anymore. Because by then I'd had like two pods. Eight ball.
The guy can put it back. All right, this is Fred Kirk, 6967. I've watched every one of your podcasts and don't recall.
Thank you.
Don't recall, I believe you meant any discussion of fishing in Yellowstone National Park, which is just down the road from you. Do you fish there? Do you guide trips there? Could you provide some insight?
I sure can. I used to fish there a lot. And the park oh my God. I remember when it hit 1 million, and now it just is routinely 2 or 3 times that.
That's 1 million annual
people.
Visitors,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And they were wondering what they were going to do, how they're going to take up with it. Well, shit, then COVID, or just before COVID, it just turned into absolute night. They have a game can on the news, on the CBS Morning Bozeman News. Matt Elwell's the weather cat, and he always shows... He's putting up towns, right? He shows the gate. You will see that routinely at 6:30 in the summer. 6:30, they'll show that, the traffic. In the summer, it can be back. The town, literally, if you've never been to West Yellowstone, the West Gate's that's the most popular gate. It's where most people go through. I think it's something like 75% or something go through at the West Gate. It is nothing to have the town back on every single street and have a backup 15, it can go down like 2.5 hours. And I got coming home from the east side, I think I was fishing Lamar, and I got behind one of these things, and it took me 3 hours to get it, and I was freaking homicidal when I got out.
It's a fucking buffalo. Move.
Yeah.
Drive.
Freaking chipmunk.
Yeah.
And I get it. People...
Bison.
People just... And it even got... You know, you even lost the fun of trying to watch people get gored because you just couldn't see it. They were too far away.
Right.
And so... I basically just gave up. This is my year to go back. And the way you beat the park is just go in at 5 a.m. And then come out, but never encourage drinking and driving, less than a 12-pack on your way out. And just take your patience because it's going to be awful. You know, just miss 5 to 7, right, when people are trying to get to dinner. Yeah. And come out at 8:30.
Yeah,
and you'll be
okay. Or even later.
And it's or 10. I mean, it's daylight still. And so, but it is the most incredible fishery on this planet, period, end of discussion, for trout fisheries. The diversity in the park, you see 5% of the park from the road. We do not guide it for the reasons I just said. We had just, my guides were frustrated. I think Trey still does, but he's figured out how to play it. And, but it, I would, if you... You can figure it out. It's not a technical fishery. The park just, you'll figure it out quickly. I'd still get one. There's a dozen guides. Mickey Wooten, we've talked about Mickey many times. If I get a chance to go in the park, I'm hiring him.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people. I mean, I know guys, one of our guides, Danny, I don't think he goes in the park anymore. He started that in there when he's like 16. And he's my age. So that's a lot of history. But it is one of the most incredible fisheries, one of the most diverse ecosystems in the world, obviously. The aquatic life is spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, shit. You got the fire hole, right? Which is just running really warm. The amount of bugs in that thing, which runs, it's called a fire hole for a reason. The amount of bugs year round. And by the way, you can fish the Madison now up to the border, it's year-round fishery. And so you can go in the lower up to the Wyoming border. And so that takes some, we used to fish the Madison there in the park or in the park section in the fall. Oh man, I mean, 10 years, we never, I mean, sometimes twice a day, going at 5 a.m, 6 to get, and it wasn't busy. I mean, I'd see it in the mornings, I would see, I'd never see anybody go. Nobody liked to go in at dark because of the bears. And so I'd take Johnny. I figured he was expendable. And so it looks kind of looks like one and makes noises like one. So we would do that. And the nights we'd go in and fish. And then you would see people, but you know, everybody was pretty polite. There weren't a lot. And I'm thinking if I said quadruple, I might be light quite a bit.
Yeah, I can guarantee the
population
that.
Just absolutely blew. And I may have had, I did that Madison video that was, we did some in the park and everything, but it wasn't me. It was somebody might say, well, you're the one that shot the video. Craig Matthews wrote 3 books about it.
Yeah,
they're all
been
great,
a bunch
by
of books.
The way. Get his books.
Yeah.
And you know, and I would call Bucky or Cam at Blue Ribbon, those guys are Bucky does the greatest wet flies. Blue Ribbon flies. Yeah.
The Lucky Bucky.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And never, they like, these guys are all swing guys. And Bucky has a whole series, if you like to go in there in the fall, this is just really specific, right? And a lot of the guys at BSA, they go in all the time too. And all the shops go in. I mean, they're right there. But I, you know, the question was, why do I fish it? This year I'm going back in. I like to go to the wind through there and stop on my way back and fish the upper Yellowstone. But I would suggest if you haven't, for sure get a guide and just be patient. I've got old now, so I'm more patient. I don't want to run everybody over. Those people that stop for the chipmunks, I do want to run over, but I don't. Get a guide, that way you can drink all the way out. It's not legal, I don't think, but you can stop and stop and have a beer every parking spot. And there will be about a billion of them because everybody stops.
There's a lot of pullouts.
Yeah. But there's a, I don't think there's a better fishery. All you have to do is look at any of the European fishing countries, or for that matter, any Scandinavian, all, everybody comes here to fish the park.
Yeah.
And they make annual. They're here. They put, because it's that good. And it is that beautiful. There is
no. It
there's
is
a
that,
reason it's
is
the that, first national. I mean, it is that gorgeous, and most people don't even. I mean, we're bitching about it. Most people don't even see it like we do.
Yeah,
they don't see the traffic because they're a lot more used to it.
I remember showing up here and I was like, "So, you guys ever go to the park?" And Jeremy's like, "I have never been in Yellowstone National Park." And
wow.
Chris is like, "I haven't been there in whatever a decade something." I'm making stuff up now, but I like swinging flies, and I, you know, I'd heard about this famous swing water up there and wanted to go get a piece of it, and it sets up really well for swinging flies. Oh. And those fish eat soft tackles high in the column. I mean,
I'll tell you someplace else. I don't know if you go over there, but the upper Yellowstone above the falls has cutthroat the size of your freaking leg.
Yeah.
It is something. I don't know. The Lamar Valley, I don't think it still swings great. The Gardner swings really good. A little more pockety, but the other ones are kind of small for me to fish. I go in there to either fall streamer or I go to dry fly fish.
Yeah.
It is unparalleled dry fly fishing.
Yes, I've done some of that. I've done some more of the fall brown trout stuff. And
and that's a big swing game for those. If you dig it, you already know about it probably, but it is a big game. As is in a smaller version, the fire hole. A lot of guys fish wet flies in the fire hole.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you can have a whatever, 100 fish day swing in there. It's nothing giant, but
I was on there once and I had never caught a fish over 17 inches in the fire hole, and I got a 17 and a half. And I was fishing with Bill Devane, and that son of a bitch wouldn't come up. And I'm like, I got a freaking giant. Oh, I got a million of them down here. And I was like, get up here. I got to witness this. I want a picture of this fish. I've never got this. And I dropped it. I'd measured it. I actually had a tape measure, a real one. I did, but I laid it on the ground, and it was one of them, you know, just ones that you zip up there. Yeah. But I wanted proof, right? And then I told Doc about it. He goes, oh, we used to get 18, 20s in there all the time. And I'm like, if anybody else would say, you're full of shit, but Doc wouldn't lie to save his life. And I've seen what he can do. So I was like, no shit. And I asked the fisheries guy, I think they were shocking. I can't remember. It was late in the season, I think. It's either early or late. It wasn't during like all the great dry. And I said to the guy, what's the biggest, has you ever seen a fish over 18 in here? He goes, oh, we shock 20s all the time. I said, you're so full of shit. Your ego just doesn't let you hear that. And I'm like, where? And he told me, no reason to lie to me.
Right.
And I said, man. So they're in there, I guess. We used to go way up, and that's where I got my bigger one. But yes, have fished it, love it. I don't think any true trout angler, let's go through some things. You cannot use lead in the park. It's barbless.
No felt.
No felt.
Have rubber soles.
Rubber soles. It's all dirt and mud anyway, so who cares? Well, not all of it. There's some over there on the other side in the Yellowstones up there. But I used to come out, and when I would come out in the old days, I would come out and spend a week in the park and a week here, or wherever, you know, whatever river I wanted to do. But I would never limit myself to a day in the park. It is just too grandiose. I mean, it is so huge, and so many different fisheries in there. There's a bunch of great lake fishing in the park, too. And there something is, like 700 different waterfalls. It might be twice that. I don't know. It's a number that is just... and you got to hike to almost all of them.
I mean, whenever I go south to fish, I always try to drive through the park just because it's so...
When I go to the T-10...
And I go through the gate at 4:30.
Yeah. When I go to fish the snake, I love... I mean, if I had a... Running from dead man to moose, you come around that... When you first see the Grand Tetons in the morning at 7 a.m. when the sun hits it, if your life doesn't change, you are worthless. Yeah. I mean, you have seen too much in the world. If your life doesn't, you see that thing. Every person I've ever seen starts scrambling for their camera. I'm like, Just to give you a hint, it's not going to move for 7 hours.
Oh, should I? I almost crashed like 9 times.
Oh, you can't help it. I'm not guiding, but I got somebody with me, and I'm just like, oh God, look at that thing. But going through the park, yeah, and you see, it's beautiful in the morning, and then you come out late, so you never. That's not a problem, but
yeah,
no, I never. That's another hit list. If you haven't fished the Upper Snake, you should hit that. But
yeah,
the park proper. You
could spend a lifetime.
Go look at. I've got it. Well, you can't find my video because it's gone. Videos are gone. Craig Matthews has several books. I know there's others. I'm just familiar with his. And one of those guys, I think John Jersak wrote one too.
So he's one. Somebody wrote a book called Runners, right?
Maybe. I don't know. But the people we've mentioned, Bucky and John, are two of the best tires I've ever seen in my life. And the shop is really quality people, and there you'll like them. They treat you. And
Bucky is the man.
Oh, God.
I mean, I went in there because, you know, I'd heard about Bucky. Greg Sato was the one who put me on the lucky.
Yeah, Mr.
Bucky
Swing himself.
Originally. Yeah. Told me I got to go in there, and so I stop in the shop. And
I actually, somebody in there, and it said to somebody, to Bucky, when he's standing there, he says, that guy turned like 3 shades of red.
Really?
He's like, oh, no, no, no. I'm like, what are you kidding? You're Da Vinci, you piece of shit.
Yeah. So I remember going in there, and you know, obviously I didn't tell him I worked for Kelly. I just went in there and just wanted some advice on fishing. Bucky talked to me for probably an hour about swinging flies in there.
Damn.
And 3 separate times he walked out to his truck to grab a different fly to come give to me. One of them had jungle cock on it. And
wow.
They're all just like little streamers he'd tied.
He gave me one piece of shit.
But he's just the best guy. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't remember me
from
Joe.
And frankly, BSA's guys, and I think Mickey works at a Madison River Fishing, MRO. Pretty sure he works out of there. I'm just real familiar with. I know all of them. But
Chester Allen is the guy who wrote Runners.
I don't know that one, but John Jersak, they've all been there. John's been there, I think, maybe since they opened it. But they're quality people, and they'll treat you good. So if you get up there, get a chance, or if you can get Mickey Wooten, go with Mickey. God, he's a blast about the park. You know, Mickey guides that in the winter. He's snowmobile guides.
Does he?
That's what he does all winter.
No, that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's a phenomenal photographer too. So that's what he's always sending me pictures in the winter of a wolf attacking something. Not going, I mean, he's right beside clicking that camera. It's like, holy shit. He had one last year of an alpha male that was, I can't remember what was going on, but probably it was brutal.
Yeah, when I was up there, I went with a guy named Jack, and I can't remember his last name right now, but he was like my first friend who worked in a fly shop. When I started fishing, he taught me so much. He actually got me to tie your mini dungeon. It was the first fly I ever tied. Set me up with all the stuff. Great dude. He took me into the park to go fish one of these, you know, I would call it a more technical cutthroat fishery, especially since it was really low water. And when we were back there, we were the only two people in the valley. And
in the Hayden Valley? Where were you? Or on the east side?
Yes, east side. We were the only two people back there, and we saw two black wolves and a silver wolf on a buffalo or bison carcass. And then, you know, they smelled something over the ridge and started running at us, and we were both like, I was a little hungover that morning. I didn't have bear spray with me. So we had one can of bear spray between the two of us, and it's kind of spooky seeing those giant wolves run at you. I know they want nothing to do with us, but it still made my hair stand up.
When something that size runs, you pretty much know what it's coming. It ain't a dinosaur.
No.
It's pretty amazing. And you know what? Nobody, only the ones who really should be gored and eaten get eaten and gored. Mm-hmm. Because if you're stupid enough to go pet one of them son bitches, when a buffalo is laying down and it's still 5.5 feet at the hump, you should hop on. You should throw a leg over and go for a ride.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely, it's a testament to what we've become. I mean,
Survival the people, of the fittest is gone.
You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, but what I was getting at is when people first come to Montana, they think there's a bear behind every sagebrush pile there is. And then once you got used to them, you go look for them and you can't find them.
Yeah.
They're not, if you drive the right places in the big valleys, you will see them. They don't want anything to do. So that keeps, at least half a dozen times or more a season, people tell me, I'd never go in that park. I'm not getting eaten by a bear. It's worth the chance. Dying by a bear attack might be the best thing you've ever lived through or died through. You never know. You never know. But it's worth it to go.
You know, I'll push back on that one. I don't think that'd be a great way to go.
I've always said that's how I want
to go. We had some comment. I'm sure I'm not going to be able to find it, but it talked about somebody who slipped on a rock, hit his head, and drowned in the river, I think in the Madison. Said,
that's happened many times.
We'd all be so lucky to go that way.
No. No. Fighting the bear.
You'd rather fight a bear?
You don't know. It might be the most, you know, right before you tip over and you're just like, come on, and he kills your ass. It might be the most orgasmic thing of your life. You don't know. You don't know until you... You want to die by not knowing how? Are you shitting me? What, do you want to die in your sleep, you pussy? Come on.
I don't want to...
Think about it.
I don't want to bleed out half-buried while the bear is...
You still got it. Haven't you seen
feeding on me.
The Revenant?
Yes. That didn't look that fun to me. But maybe
he
that's
what you... He lived through it, dude. He'll never... I was in British Columbia filming Steelhead Show one time. We were in this bar, and there was this dude that got attacked by a bear.
Yeah, and he's alive. That's cool.
He was an old dude, too. He's like a 60-year-old logger. That means you're 200. Yeah. And he had three of his sons with him, and they went out. He went over a beaver dam. Or no. I watched it on TV. That was a different drunk logger that I got the map from that we did the show. We watched him on local news. He goes over this beaver dam halfway through. The sow comes. There's a cub involved, and the sow comes running over and attacks him and hits him so hard, breaks his leg. His gun goes flying. Still got a knife. He's a little guy too.
Yeah.
He's a little guy, and he stabs the bear. And it's trying to disembowel him, and he just keeps fighting, and he's just stabbing this thing, right? And he's finally, it gets over top of him, he's trying to disembowel him, and it came over to the top, and he's able to jam this thing up into its chest, and he finally, at his last one, he said he reached up and stuck, and he hit it in the carotid artery, I guess, if they have the same location. I don't know. And he said it screamed and bled out almost instantly right there and fell right beside him. Now he's got a broken leg, his guts are hanging out, he's everywhere, and he fires the warning shot, which I think he said four shots, which I never knew that to be a rescue thing, but I might be wrong on that one. But it was something, he did fire the shots. Well, his sons thought he was just hunting, and they didn't come back. So here this guy is, he's in the hospital, this guy is, he looks like a freaking soup sandwich, it's just like this, yeah. He's doing the interview. He's a disaster. And he says, it was the greatest line in history of the world. He goes, and he's got the whole A. He goes, hey, I'd heard about all that playing dead stuff, A, but I'd have no part of that. And I thought to myself, that son of a bitch will never buy a beer in his life.
You better not.
He will, every person on earth. Okay, one more time. Tell us the story.
That
could be you.
Yeah, it won't be you. Hopefully.
Or you could be deader than shit and be bear scout. Who cares? You're dead.
Yeah.
Live a little.
I still don't.
Do not come to the park. Do not come to the park because you think you're going to get eaten by a bear. And almost all the bear attacks are in the spring, and they're almost bicyclers, but they probably should be doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's almost always
for exercise.
It's almost always those stupid 2-year-olds. Every once in a while, but when you look at the ones that got attacked and eaten, it's almost always their fault. If you're that dumb.
How about, not that it was their fault, but remember those two kids, I think they're from Missoula, who wrestled the bear? I think they were both high school or college wrestlers, and they got attacked by a bear. I believe they choked it out.
I don't believe you could choke out a bear, but they might have got away. They might have, if you fought against the bear, that's what you...
I don't think it was a big bear. I probably have these details wrong.
I got drunk and tried to do that You know, in the ring where they put the muzzles and all that shit.
Really?
Oh, God. They're impervious.
Yeah, no, they're super strong. It's like, Jeremy always talks about...
they just thump your ass.
Yeah, you need a giant... Actually, I'll ask this
They might. I do remember something.
You need a big handgun, otherwise you're just tickling it. And yeah. I think it was either Jeremy or Chris who said... It's like, yeah, dude, they've got 8 inches of brisket in between anything.
Yeah, and there's so much fat on them. But, yeah. But the point is, nobody... It just doesn't happen.
Right.
You go to dinner in a city and you walk downtown, you got a lot better chance of getting taken off than you do.
If you get in your car,
yeah,
you
take
have
a drive.
Way higher chances of dying. But
the bear thing is just, it keeps you tingly the whole time. It's really cool.
Yeah, it keeps you on.
Oh, you're just
it's good to
you're
feel
looking
something.
Around, you're waiting. It's
But like fun. You said, I remember that
the
show.
Buffalo scare me worse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I hate those pieces.
The show we filmed and didn't put out, I remember you talked about that, you know, when you first...
The one where the river that I didn't want to show?
Yeah. Yeah, when you first move here, you think there's a bear behind every bush.
Yeah.
I remember being scared shitless, walking around with two cans of bear spray and a gun.
On that river, I'm scared shitless all the time anyway, but the fishing's so good that you forget.
Yeah.
That's when you get eaten.
And then there's cows out there, too.
And buffalo.
Yeah.
And moose. The moose are...
Oh, the moose.
Not buffalo. Not there. There's buffalo. But there's moose, I was saying. They kind of scare me.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to not go someplace. I mean, I think it, being in British Columbia, when we'd fly in on the Dean, the number of bears that we, you know, you see them. And that was back, you can't have a handgun.
Yeah.
And that was the first, I mean, I remember there was no bear spray even, you know, so you just went and fished and nobody ever got ate. Nobody, you'd see them. I had one charge me, huff me, but not, you know, big deal. I have dogs bark at me too. The outcome's the same. You know, you're on the Dean. Would you rather die on the Dean swinging and have a 20-pound fish eat your dry fly or live safe? If you say safe, you're fired.
Die swinging.
Exactly.
But I'd rather swing and then not get eaten by a bear if I could choose.
Nobody gets eaten by bears.
All right.
Think of all the people have been up there.
Here's a question from Philip Van Campen 3394, who I think this is the first question we've done from him. He's a pretty consistent commenter, so thank you for your comments and efforts. He says, you guys have spoken about bears before and even alluded to carrying a handgun. I'm curious how you approach it in the part of Southwest Montana. I'm headed out this summer to fish by myself for a couple weeks. While I plan on hitting the larger waters like the Madison and the Yellowstone, I know I'm going to want to hit some smaller creeks, take some backcountry hikes, hit some less pressured water. I plan on carrying spray on my hip per usual, but I also plan on carrying my 10mm with bear rounds in a chest harness. How common is open carry on the river? Am I going to freak people out, or are they just going to think I'm some crazy local?
Good question. Good call on the gun, too. That's all I carry. And I always carry chest. Depends. Where did he say he was going to be? Just around here, not in the park, or where?
He didn't specifically say park. He said backcountry, small water, Southwest Montana. I mean,
yeah,
we're in grizzly country.
I doubt that you would. It didn't, you know. No, I don't think you'll freak anybody out. I mean, somebody's going to be freaked out by everything, but who cares? It's, you know, grow up. But they, I do the exact same. What's his name?
Phil.
Phil, I do the exact same thing. I carry the spray first. And I mean, I always, like when Mel and I are riding, we both carry 10s. And we'll both carry bear spray. Much would rather spray a bear and just walk away than I would shoot one. But I think this spring alone, I think there was two different guys that got charged and shot the bear and you know, killed it. Well, that one, there was one on a creek that went... they didn't find it. They don't know if it was dead or not, but I don't, you won't freak anybody out. Nobody, I mean, if they're not everybody should, I always have mine inside my, I've always got a throw over shirt or whatever. And I don't, especially on horses, people are hiking all the time and they don't need to know I've got, I'm not, there's no quick drawing up there anyway. I mean, if the bear comes running, that's the thing.
30, 35 miles per hour.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of feet in
and
seconds.
It's crazy. Yeah. Half their body length, they're at full velocity. I mean, if you saw one, if the chances of seeing one up close has got to be hundreds of millions to one.
It's minimal.
Right? Yeah, it's just nothing. But I don't have any problem. If I got a t-shirt on, if it's 100 degrees out, I've got it hanging right there on my chest.
Yeah.
And, but I, you know, that's pretty standard attire for the backcountry. Most of the people you see, and you're in Montana, which is a constitutional carry thing like the world should be. It's not that uncommon. And, you know, you're not going to, everybody, myself included, is afraid of the bear, encounter. Yes. So, you know, afraid's the wrong word. I mean, aware that it could happen.
Yeah.
And so come as prepared as you can. Remember, you can't fly with your bear spray. We get about 100 cans a year people leave with us, and I quit keeping it for people.
We set one off in the shop.
Jeremy stepped on the son of a bitch. We had like 50 of them under there, and it was going, but it was in the bottom, so you couldn't hear it.
No, you could hear it. It was, but he barely triggered it. It was in the corner. I remember he's sitting in the.
He told me he had his foot on it for a long time.
No, it wasn't. He was sitting there. I'm sitting next to him, and Matt's at the computer, and I hear, psst. It's just like that, and Jeremy goes, "Oh fuck."
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, and it wasn't much. It shot into the corner, not into the air. For the next 2 days, all of our eyes were like fuzzy.
Oh, everything. For 2 days, my ass, for 2 years, every time I'd reach down to one of them cans and you go like this, you know, I'm a continuous fidgeter.
Yeah.
You know, doing this with my mustache, scratching my face, whatever. I'm going home. My eyes are killing me, right? I finally figured out, because we threw the one can out, but it went to every one of them.
Yeah, I got all of
it. My favorite bear thing like that was when we deployed it out there and it came in the window.
Oh.
And everybody, it knocked Johnny down. I shot it. There's no wind. I just shot it to see if there's still anything in it. It was the original bear spray. I can't remember what it was called. And it was the only one you could take to Canada. And I had it for a long time. So I just wanted to see. I was getting a new one anyway. And it shot out and the wind picked up just as I did it. Johnny's walking off the porch with a case of water. Hits the ground and just starts screaming. I thought he saw me do it and he was messing with me. Yeah. I don't even think about it. And then somebody else comes around the corner and they're like, oh, and I'm like, oh shit. So I ran in the house. I ran in here. You guys are on your own. And it might have been Andy. I can't remember who it was. And so closed all the doors, right? But it was too late. I closed the windows and doors. And a guy walked in 45 minutes later and he's like, like I do all the time.
Yeah.
Mine isn't bear spray.
It's just, it's the
and
tickle.
He's like, yeah. And he's standing there and I go, you got allergies? And he goes, must be. He says, I don't know. Yeah, something. Must be something in the air. Yeah, something.
Yeah. I remember Matt saying, we were talking to some customer, the guy was scared of bears. He's talking about it. And I remember Matt looks at him and Matt is hilarious, especially at times where maybe he shouldn't be, but he looks at the guy and goes, do you think I could just spray the bear spray on myself so then at least I'm spicy? I think we're talking about bears charging and whatever.
People have done that in the park.
Yeah, I heard it about the one guy who hosed down his family thinking it was bear repellent.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, it's not uncommon at all. People, or they just play. Don't mess with the shit. Don't test it. You will be sorry.
I think Chris heard this on the Meat Eater podcast. They were telling horror stories of bear spray going off in cars and just, it totals the car.
I mean, you can't. Oh yeah, there's no getting it out. So, it's an oil base.
Chris told me this, so I went and bought a ammo can. I keep my bear spray in an ammo can in my car now because for 3 years I kept it in a couple.
One of our buddies, Jeremy's friends, I can't remember who it was, dog was chewing on one in his car and deployed it.
Ooh.
And then nothing happened.
Oh.
It must have just, I mean, I don't remember, I had just sprayed in one spot or something. I don't know, but God, it just goes everywhere. Get a bear spray, get a 10, practice.
And the other funny one, I remember Chris
both
telling me.
Both the bear spray and the.
He crossed between the lakes. There's snow on the ground. It's, you know, it's below freezing. He goes over there to fish. And I guess on the crossing, his bear spray had gone off in his bag. He had one of those Sims waterproof backpacks and didn't know.
Yep.
So he opened it up and gets blasted with it, even though it's already gone off.
Yeah,
right? It's just the air. It's not even pressurized anymore. And sorry, Chris, if I screw this up, but I believe it was like 2 hours of him basically just like laying on the side of the river in the snow, trying to put snow in his face, eyes.
And it's all oil.
He didn't believe how much mucus he had in him.
Oh,
it was just draining out of every pore.
I can't imagine taking a full. And that's why, you know, they sell those cans that you can practice with.
Yeah.
And listen to what, go watch the videos.
Yeah, aim at the ground and do
whatever.
And
do whatever, but be prepared. And you'll, maybe you'll fish more and worry less. But I don't know. I get in the park, which is the highest concentration, I think, of bears. They're pretty habituated. So 2-year-olds are kind of dumb, but I have never seen one that wanted to play. Yeah. I mean, anywhere, even in BC, they run and they don't want, you're not really on the menu. You'd have to be pretty stupid, but.
Well, it'd be a bad bear.
Hmm?
It'd be a bad bear.
You know, it is what it is. Don't, the last thing on earth you want to do is be a pussy and not go places because you're worried about a bear.
There are plenty of places like, just where I was in Wyoming, there's plenty of places in the park I fish where when I'm going through willows and dense brush, I've got my hand on my bear spray. But I'm still walking through it, going to
fish. Make some noise. They can hear you. Yeah. They can smell your lame ass a long ways away.
What the hell?
You live in a truck.
I shower a lot, except when I'm
camping. Maybe they like the smell of it. Yeah. I read something where a bear's olfactory system is 50 times more sensitive than a canine.
Yeah.
They can smell the moss up that mountain, you know, 3,000, 4,000 feet above them. So they know you are there.
And I think polar bears are even more so than grizzly bears. I think they have the best nose in the world.
Point is, the bear knows you're there.
Yeah.
He's usually long gone. Make a little bit of noise.
But, you know, careful if the wind's blowing, right? Then he might not know you're there.
He knows you're there.
All right, he probably knows
you. They live there all the time.
But no, that's generally when bad interactions happen is when you surprise them.
Yeah.
Like that.
You're in the river.
The gal who was running in West Yellowstone a couple of years ago who was.
She's got nibbled. She's got nicked. That one?
No, she got like her head turned around.
Oh, that's three what I was thinking.
They think she died instantly.
Oh, that's not what I was thinking of. I know a girl that got bit. It's kind of. It kind of almost like the.
Like your dog's biting.
Like deadly bites you in the leg. And I'm thinking, that's tragic. I have a friend from Michigan, Susie, she got bit. And her boyfriend got killed. But that was a sleep thing. Don't ever listen to these stories. Don't listen to the stories. Don't rewind. Take that out.
Yeah,
that completely. We're going to take that out of the video.
It is
because it's not. It never happens.
It is used as like some people in fly shops use rattlesnakes. You know, you're asking about kind of a secret waterway. And they go, oh, a lot of snakes there. Same thing happens. Oh, there's tons of bears up there.
I had that house on the Big Hole for 5 years. And all I heard about was all the rattlesnakes. Rattlesnake. I never see a snake. I never see anything.
Yeah, you can
see the guy who collects them lives down the street. And he says, do you mind if I go up on your property and look for snakes? I said, no, I'd like to go with you. And he says, well, have you ever seen any at your place? I said, no, but I hear about them all the time from the guys, you know, you guys used it more than I did. And Dougie seemed to see them constantly. And he goes, you know, I've never seen one over 12 inches between the diversion in here. And he walks the road every day, right? And he does rattlesnake hides and, you know, hat bands and stuff. And I said, well, how many? He said, I've seen one snake here, one rattlesnake ever. This guy's out looking for him. He goes crawling around looking for him, right? And keeps him. So it's always, it's just like everything out here. Everything's bigger in Montana.
It's
the bears, the snakes, the everything. Why is there not more dead people?
Well, I can't remember the name of the fallacy, but it's a perception fallacy. It's something like that. People are afraid of airplanes because when it happens, it's so.
Like this morning.
Was there a flight that went down?
Huge.
Oh,
oops. India.
Sorry. Didn't know that. Respect to all those people. When it happens, it's so noteworthy.
Yeah.
Right? But it's so much safer than getting in your car.
Yeah.
You know, people die in car accidents all the time. But it doesn't.
I tell people about the bears here. When you think you're going to see one, go try to find one.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I've done it lots of
times. I've tried to find them in the park so many times, and I've never seen one.
I go up here riding, hiking, whatever, especially 10 years, 15 years ago, go looking for them, can't find them, right? It's like, it's just, go have fun. Don't let the world scare you. Be more afraid of what you're going to eat in the restaurant.
That's enough on animals, bears, rattlesnakes, like. Hopefully you found that entertaining. We're going to do our Tuesday reading now. And this one is a comment on our YouTube. And it's called a Tuesday reading because this guy, Academic Mailbox 779.
Oh, my God. You can't read all of it.
The most well-written comments I've ever seen.
He
must be an English professor.
He has to be something. I keep waiting for him to write in and correct my grammar. You know, thank God he can't read when I.
They're always extremely interesting. If you guys want, go find him. Almost every video we do, he leaves a very interesting comment.
We were talking about taking those and making a book out of them.
Yeah,
because he's really smart. And some of it is so ahead of, and he obviously does everything.
He's well written. Yes.
He does gear. He does everything. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's European because he's so on everything. Every step.
Proper. But he knows his history. He knows all the players. Yeah.
I just thought you were going to read a whole chapter because usually they're about, you know, 10
paragraphs. This is the shortest one I've
seen.
Go. This is two paragraphs. All right. He says, Academic Mailbox 7798. On the subject of angling for trout, having gotten far away from this type of angling that was part of the scene decades ago growing up, Kelly's mention of the number 2 size MEPS lure unlocked a few memories. There's an angler who is somewhat of a specialist in catching or just finding those limited number of predatory top of the food chain brown trout, meat eaters in our rivers. And his secret weapon that he revealed in one particular fit of euphoria when he'd extracted a hook mouth monster from a few yards downriver of where half a dozen normal anglers were busy catching our limits of half pounders was a size 2 MEPS lure. We couldn't quite believe that within shouting distance of where we all fished, these sort of brown trout we'd never even seen existed right there. He was a specialist, and it was nothing for him to cover 5 miles at least once a year in search of his top of the pyramid kinds of fish. In the vein of specialist bladed lure angling approach, I've been searching for an angler who sort of mirrors the same thing in their system. Throwing bullet spinners is all fine and dandy for creeks and brooks. It couldn't operate through the same efficiency, I reckon, on a larger Madison or White River, etc. And we even knew that 40 years ago, when we knew the kinds of browns that those specialists could target with their lures, I'm losing it now. On the big rivers, they were lost. However, in that period between then and now, I've wondered what it would be like if I still knew a guy similar to that number 2 Gold MEPS lure angler who caught this large predatory brown. What refinements would he have discovered since then? I'm not sure it's really a question. I think it's pondering.
It's a good reading.
It's a good reading, yeah. I just want to give the guy a little love. I mean, he puts a lot of time into writing his comments, and we do read them. Sometimes I get lost a little bit in the depth, but we do appreciate it.
They're still out there.
Yeah.
And I used to fish with a guy named Jim Bedford who wrote the book on spinner fishing. And I make mention, like I said last week, if a glorified crankbait fisherman, I said, great. If you want to find the biggest fish in that river, I mean, you take a 2 or even bigger blade, especially on those French blades. Everybody's got their own. I'm not a big willow leaf, but I ran them all my life. And it's how I used to, I think I've told this before, it's how we discovered where steelhead were in the fall. We didn't know there had fall steelhead. And you would slow roll MEPS to see if you could get one to move. We're just trying to figure out where they were.
Yeah.
Right? We didn't know. And I mean, they hardly knew there was steelhead in the river until the 60s. And so, but the blade thing, that vibration, I talk about it in the books a lot, how I believe that is all you need is that rotation, that blade. The one thing you'll find is they fish them really slow and they fish them upstream. And it's ideally, Jim told me once, when you've mastered the 12 blade per foot, 12 rotations per foot, you've mastered it. This guy was really good, right? And Eric Paolo, one of my buddies back there, he used to do a ton of it. And then the size of fish, and I did it a lot when I would fish alone, especially when I would fish out of my boat alone. I'd bring a spinning rod with me, and I'd run a MEPS with no hooks, and I would just try to get the fish to roll.
Yeah.
That's going to go on and on, so we might as well just
wait. The phone's ringing. Oh, I think I can cut that out in post-production, but if you hear it, sorry.
Yeah.
Quit your bitch.
We're after a thing. But to his point, we talk about Bill Erdman a lot. And yep. Bill's a crank guy. He does more of that. He's not much of a spinner guy. And so I whoever your buddy was, academic, I guarantee you nothing's changed. You will find the biggest fish. I actually did better on crankbaits after dark than I did spinners, which I found strange. But that, I don't know why. But maybe it was just a confidence thing. But I guarantee you that if you want to, and I've done it on small streams where I just go out and like I do with my flies, if something's working, I'll change it. I would go out with no hooks to see if I could roll a fish, right? Just show me where you live, right? And then I would go back, for those of you, when whoever writes in and tells me that I'm glorified anything, the fact that you're listening to me tells me that you're the greatest in the world and we need to hear your podcast. But I would do it as a learning technique, right? And particularly, I used to do it a ton on some of the northern rivers. And I would do it for steelhead, and I did it by chance. I saw a giant brown once. And way before the whole book thing and all that stuff. And it was that same thing, trying to see where are the steelhead, right? And I had a brown of about 18, 20 pounds come up and eat it. And there he was, and didn't have a hook on. But they were just lake fish coming up, right? It was November. But it's a really great learning tool, like fishing with a guy who, like I do with Bill so much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. I mean, doesn't matter how you learn. If we never talked about where we fished, because we fished different than people did 25 years ago in different places. And who cares if somebody's fishing gear and they outfish you or they catch a bigger fish or whatever? You saw where the fish came from.
Yep.
That was the learning tool. Mm-hmm. That was the, you learned that a really fast rotating blade didn't draw fish, right? Just doesn't. People, I say it all the time. People say, oh, there's some guy down there fishing spinners. Don't worry about which way is he throwing his flinner? He goes down and across. Says he'll never get one. They don't come to that buzz. You know, they like that thing. And you started figuring out where fish lied. You know, everybody knows about my diving. You don't know that I carried gear with me and checked things, you know, crankbaits. And then not all the time without hooks, by the way. I didn't, you know, I'm there to see what's coming out. Yeah. And I had a buddy once follow me downriver, and I was guiding, and I had two superstar streamer guys, right? Really good. And he's coming behind us. I'm quite certain he was solo, and he would just anchor up and run the runs behind us. He got two 28s behind us. Well, you can only, that might just shatter you, and you might go into your, band-aid on your freaking ego, and goddamn, you know, or you could go, what color was it? How fast was it? Where was it? Did we fish it in front of you? Yeah, you did. Did we fish it right? Yeah, that's where it was. Well, then you got to learn. And then you got to figure out, Russ was big on that too, right? And you learn from everybody.
I think Brammer does a lot of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's always done boat gear and rent fly. And so you have a big advantage with that. Sometimes it draws you to the dark side and you never come home. I mean, you go out and fish with Bill like that show we just shot.
Yeah.
I mean, dude,
don't ruin it. I don't want to ruin it. I'm working on it right now. I just showed Kelly the cut of what we're talking about.
When you see what we're talking about, you'll get it.
Yeah, right? It's pretty cool.
And in some days you'll keep up. Most days you won't. It's just like fishing behind somebody with bait. So some things, sometimes you can keep up pretty good. Usually no. But you can learn from every single freaking fish you see caught.
I mean, the whatever, 5 or so days I've spent around Bill, maybe more than that now, I've always worried that I've just pestered him too much by firing questions at him. Cause yeah. I, you know, at this point I've spent a lot of time.
You've caught a couple 130 inch fish. It really doesn't bother me.
I don't know if there's a lot of people in Montana that have caught more 10-pound fish than Bill.
I don't think so.
And I just, you know, I've learned so much from Kelly. I want to hear the gear perspective now. And obviously, you have some of that too. But
not some of a grandiose amount.
Yes, a ton of it. Yeah, but
I grew up fishing it, and I transitioned into the fly thing. And we didn't, but we didn't, the streamer thing's way later in the world.
Right.
You know, and so the steelhead in particular, and the byproduct from steelhead fishing for, in particular, fall steelhead and or salmon, and then the byproduct of high 20s brown trout and 30 brown trout that may or may not be out of the lake, and for sure a lot of them are residents, and all of a sudden you're saying to yourself, well, that's not where I would have fished my fly. That's all you're trying to garner out of the thing. You're trying to figure out where's the fish. Doesn't matter if you throw your freaking Kelly Gallup sex dungeon, you know, in the wrong spot. If the fish isn't there, the fish doesn't bite.
Right.
It's just that simple. I mean, there's tens of thousands of books on fishing, and it's as simple as your fly has to be where the fish is. Mm-hmm. And so the speed in which, especially if you've got two of you, notice that Bill always fishes behind me, you know, playing cleanup. That makes it that much worse. Mm-hmm. I mean, when a 30 comes behind you and you know for a fact that your fly crossed it. Now that's when you'll see people get all pissed off, right?
That's when
not me. I want a picture of where it was. I want to see how fast he was running his crank, you know, because, you know, were you jigging it? What were you doing to the?
What was your action?
Most people don't get it. I've told that story 1,000 times about being with Shaw Grigsby. And Shaw is one of the greatest bass anglers. He likes fly fishing too. He does a lot of it. But Shaw is one of the greatest bass anglers that's ever lived. And we're walking down, we're at Lunkers, we're both speaking. There was a shit ton of us there, man. All the Van Damme was there, Bill Dance was there. I mean, just the who's who of the bass world. And me and Jack, I think, were there. And for the fly end. And I'm talking to Shaw, and he'd asked me to send him a book. Because he was doing fly shows on his bass show.
Yeah.
And that's how I met him. That's how I walked up, is you didn't stay out of my business. I love that fly fishing stuff. and I was walking to lunch, and I asked him, I said, for those of you who don't know, and I've probably said this same exact story on this before, but for those of you who don't know, in the bass world, the average, I don't know if it's still true, but the average bass contest is won by 13 ounces. That was a stat a long time ago. I don't think it's that different. But you start with hundreds of thousands of anglers, and to get to the Bassmaster Elite or Classic, one of those, or even in the high-end MLF, you start with thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of anglers. It's everybody's dream, right? And you get to the top 50, and you got to keep requalifying, right? And the top 15 of that 50 are always there. Not always, there's no always, but I mean usually.
Right.
And I said to Shaw Grigsby, what's the difference? You should be thinking about this if you are a streamer cat. For that matter, you should be thinking about it for all your flies, in particular dry flies. Because if you're still just dead drifting dry flies, you're leaving a lot of fish on there's flies that need to move. You know, a lot of caddis are sputtering around out there. Fish the fly is a living insect. Leonard Wright Jr. Great book. But anyway, I asked Shaw walking in dead stride. I said, what's the difference between top 15 and everybody else? He doesn't even blink. He doesn't take a breath. He said, and he didn't, we were walking. He said, sir, ability to move their lure, their rod, not their reel. Just that fast. I'm like, there's no way you've been asked that many times. And I got thinking about it. That's the difference between great streamer anglers
and rope pullers.
And rope pulling can work great, but it doesn't always work great.
Yeah.
You're fishing for 5 days, and the average bass contest was back then by 13 ounces. You start with 50 of the best anglers in the world.
That's law of large numbers.
And then there's a guy named Kevin Van Dam, who was the most award winning guy in the world, right? He's called Dr. Crankenstein. He runs crankbaits. Well, if all it took was to throw the son of a bitch out there and reel it back in, don't you think some other dumbass could do it?
Yeah.
Don't just one day, wouldn't somebody just kick his ass? Something's different. As Russ says, the only difference between you and every other guy in here is your fly. And how your fly's moving is the difference between you and Mr. Never Catch Anything.
Yeah.
And so I love fishing with gear guys. And by the way, I love fishing gear. Whoever said you're a glorified crankbait, I've been working on that for 40 years. I'm a lot better with a fly than I am with a crankbait.
Yeah.
And I want to be good. But
so yeah. There's another comment that talked about Russ's comment and this. We don't have time to get into it today, but we're going to do that in the next show because I think that guy thought it was a statement of arrogance. I don't. Let's get into it. What the hell? So he said,
cut it and throw it next week. Yeah.
What's that?
You know, I put it in next week.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So he says, let me find it. The Zach Tree he actually commented it today on YouTube. He said, the only difference between you and everyone else is your fly has to be the most bullshit, ignorant statement that only would be repeated or said by someone trying to sell you flies. The truth is the fly doesn't mean fuck shit as much as you make it out. It's all presentation. Tightline nymphing works so good because of presentation. A Tenkara angler fishing soft hackles does so well because of presentation. Presentation can't be sold to you, and it's not as romantic or interesting to write and talk about. I think he's angry.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And well, I think he misinterpreted the comment.
Well, if he's talking about Russ's, first and foremost, it would be you are completely wrong, because what Russ is telling you is the only difference between you and every other swinging dick in the river is your fly, which means probably you should be tying your own, which was Russ was getting at. The only difference between you and the other guy with 500 sex dungeons, but from the same company, because they're all tied by the same. He was saying the difference is, and by the way, nobody's better than this guy. I would love to have you go fish with him if you're that arrogant, if you think that he's wrong. The difference is sometimes they see a lot of the same retrieve. In particular streamer, 90% of people have one game. They throw it out and they pull their rope on almost the exact same cadence of every fly, of every style, every moment in every river, in every bend, in every riffle, in every flat, mid-flat. Everything's the same. So if they see 10,000 of the same fly tied by the same people, and you have one that you have changed the way that fly, maybe you've got one that stalls better. Listen to the musky fool guys and see how what they think about how important that fly is,
yeah.
Right? Because they want one that does something in particular. For muskies in particular, there's a lot less muskies caught than there are trout. But the statement isn't bullshit. Your inference is, which pisses me off in the first place, you're full of shit, is that it's a sales tactic. Well, it wasn't a sales tactic, dumbass. It was about tying your own fly. And the only difference between you and every other is your fly, is what he said. And he meant tie your own, create your own.
It's actually the opposite of a sales tactic.
That's exact. If you were watching the video that he did, or he's done hundreds of them, I don't know, videos, but speakings, and he says it every time, because he was getting to the point where he was saying it, and I think he might have even been talking that one time I heard him was about dungeons. It's the number one selling streamer in the world. I mean, they're all tied in Cambodia by the same people, and they're only sold, real ones are only sold from MFC. A hallmark of great fly tying is that everyone looks the same.
Yep.
If you are a great tire and you can tie 10 of that fly, I don't give a shit when it is, if you can't make your flies with exactly the same amount of thread count, and the head and your tails are in the dirt and everything's set and your wings, they should look identical. They should look freaking clones. Well, that's great, except if you're fishing the same fly I am behind the last 20 guys that went.
Yep.
And the same color. The only difference, that was his point. The difference is, and presentation, you kind of lost me on the nymph thing about presentation, especially when you talk Euro, which is the presentation's pretty much static in the water column. If you're talking dry flies, no,
what I think he means is that the Euro is it leads to a great presentation, maybe better than a bobber of presenting a nymph. I think that's his point.
I could see that in some cases.
In defense of him,
water.
In defense of him, presentation is massively.
Jesus Christ,
important.
That's all we talk about.
Yeah, it's massively.
How many times
important.
In this goddamn thing have I said, It's, you can fish any fly.
Yeah.
I wonder sometimes these people, if they hear anything except what they want to hear. It's such crack of shit. I've written 2 books, 3 if you count Cripples and Spinners, on presentation.
Yes.
It's not about the flies. I don't make any money when you tie your own fly, and I encourage people to tie their own fly. Why do you think we dissect flies on this show, for Christ's sake? So it's about priest. That's why I say you've got to have at least 2 retrieves. You got to have a fast game, a slow game, but you better have a jig game too. I mean, now you want to talk. I'd love to have you show me all your presentations. That's what we talk about. It's not the damn fly.
I mean,
much as I would like it to be.
We talked about how you could attack pretty much any mayfly hatch in the world with a box of parachute atoms and a couple Sharpies.
Yeah, I mean,
if you present the fly well.
Exactly. I take great offense to this comment. Yeah. I mean, because
Thanks for coming.
You're probably a great guy. I'm just pissed. I have spent my entire life teaching. Every damn minute of my adult life has been teaching. I want to find somebody that's done more videos and more teaching than I have tried to do. I have never said it wasn't that. My whole life's about presentation. Why do you say I say don't be just a rope puller? And the fly, to say that it's a sales pitch, you missed the point. It's important that you know how to run your fly. It's important to have a fly.
We were talking about jig flies.
Yeah.
The whole point of showing those flies is that it's a specific presentation.
It's a style.
Yes.
And you should have 3 styles. You should have at least 3. And in a streamer game, and you better have 2 or 3 on your dry fly game. Now, Euro's a little static. You're kind of getting into the zone where you're trying to lead and doing like that. I agree with you. It's the same. I mean, Howard and I were fishing. He was straight up Euro, right? And he basically mentioned how it has its limitations too, but it's more static. Ours is absolutely liquid. It's moving every second. Every inch of your body's moving. If you're a static dry fly cat, you are leaving so many. You want to go see somebody, go fish with Jason Pruitt or Larry Larson and go down on the South Fork and fish salmon flies. These guys, it's called the South Fork Twitch. They run those son bitches almost as fast as we run our streamers.
Yeah.
Across the surface.
Jake does that. First time I ever fish salmon flies with him.
Oh, just annihilate it. But they do their hoppers.
It's fishing streamers.
They do hoppers the same way. If you're a caddis angler on this river and you've only got a dry dead drift, boy, you're leaving a lot of fish out there. So, I probably went crazy on that. But I think the point was missed. Is the only difference between you and every other cat is your fly, if that's the same fly, and everything's the same. You're throwing it across the river and you're doing the rope pull.
If you're throwing a size 6 salmon fly water walker, those fish have seen a lot of those.
Yes. Yeah. And your presentation, and then you got to clarify what presentation means to you. Is it a dead drift? Is it a Euro is a complete dead drift?
Yes.
Right? You don't see a whole lot of jig in your fly. You see it go out and try to keep your fly.
You get the guys that are doing crawfish, little streamers and stuff. They will jig and
yeah.
But when you're traditional Euro nymphing.
Well, that's what was stated. That was the comment.
Yep.
So,
yep.
We didn't talk about dries or anything.
I just want to cover our bases in case somebody tries to yell at us again.
I fish a lot of jig flies Euro style.
Yeah.
That little green and white thing, they eat the shit.
That's all I do when I have banks upriver.
It's a blast.
Euro nymphing streamers.
Yes. But again, it's a tactic.
Euro
and
jig.
Then you do move things, but I think we missed something in there because I don't think anybody's harped more on techniques and having technique. Jesus, I have like 5 videos on techniques before when they still were alive. They still had these things called videos and I have VHSs.
Yeah.
And what's that little round thing that still, what were those called? CDs.
DVDs.
DVDs. Yeah, whatever those things are. I mean, we were doing it forever and it's always been. We can go, even on your Euro thing, if you want to go back 20 years ago, you can see the first sighter when I did that. And we were Euro nymphing and drop shotting back then. It's not, you didn't invent it just lately. But where everything about every video we've ever done is have more than one technique.
Yeah.
When you watch people go out and they start fishing, even people that have fished for quite a while, and you fish with them, you will see they are pretty mono. They've got one thing. They fish upstream dry flies or they fish down and across swings. You know, they're just pretty static. There's not a lot of fluidity to them. They're not moving around. So I hope that didn't piss you off too much, but it pissed me off. So
it gave us great fodder. We've run very long, so hopefully you guys are enjoying
this. Maybe we'll cut it
extra long episode. We may pick it up again.
Cut some of the boring shit out.
We might pick some more of this up next episode. Real quick, let's do band of the week. What you got?
Cheap Trick.
I'm going to go with your favorite country singer's favorite country singer, John Prine.
I think he is a country singer, but that's all right.
I think he, you know, Country Music Awards and all that. I think people think it doesn't.
I mean, he's not.
I don't know what he is.
I love him.
If you don't know the song, I Ain't Hurting Nobody, go listen to it.
Just sit.
There's roosters
shucking,
laying chickens. Just chickens shucking, laying eggs.
Just shucking corn.
Farm machinery eating people's arms and legs.
Thank you.
Thanks, y'all.